Chapter 3. Dombey and Son. Dombey sat in the corner of the darkened room in the great armchair by the bedside, and Son lay tucked up warm in a little basket bedstead, carefully disposed on a low settee immediately in front of the fire and close to it, as if his constitution were analogous to that of a muffin, and it was essential to toast him brown, while he was very new. Dombey was about 8 and 40 years of age. Son about 8 and 40 minutes. Dombey was rather bald, rather red, and though a handsome well-made man, too stern and pompous in appearance, to be prepossessing. Son was very bald, and very red, and though, of course, an undeniably fine infant, somewhat crushed and spotty in his general effect, as yet. On the brow of Dombey, time and his brother Care had set some marks, as on a tree, that was to come down in good time. Remorseless twins they are for striding through their human forests, notching as they go, while the countenance of Son was crossed with a thousand little creases, which the same deceitful time would take delight in smoothing out, and wearing away with the flat part of his scythe, as a preparation of the surface for his deeper operations. Dombey, exulting in the long-looked-for event, jingled and jingled the heavy gold watch chain that depended from below his trim blue coat, whereof the buttons sparkled phosphorescently in the feeble rays of the distant fire. Son, with his little fists curled up and clenched, seemed, in his feeble way, to be squaring at existence for having come upon him so unexpectedly. The house will once again, Mrs. Dombey, apostrophe said Mr. Dombey, be not only in name, but in fact Dombey and Son, apostrophe and he added, in a tone of luxurious satisfaction, with his eyes half closed, as if he were reading the name in a device of flowers, and inhaling their fragrance at the same time, Dombey and Son. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the words had such a softening influence, that he appended a term of endearment to Mrs. Dombey's name, though not without some hesitation, as being a man, but little used to that form of address, colon and said, Mrs. Dombey, my dear. Apostrophe, a transient flush of faint surprise overspread the sick lady's face as she raised her eyes towards him. He will be christened Paul, my Mrs. Dombey, of course. Apostrophe, she feebly echoed, of course, apostrophe or rather expressed it by the motion of her lips, and closed her eyes again. His father's name, Mrs. Dombey, and his grandfather's. I wish his grandfather were alive this day. There is some inconvenience in the necessity of writing Junior, apostrophe said Mr. Dombey, making a fictitious autograph on his knee. But it is merely of a private and personal complexion. It doesn't enter into the correspondence of the house. Its signature remains the same. Apostrophe and again he said Dombey and Son, in exactly the same tone as before. Those three words conveyed the one idea of Mr. Dombey's life. The earth was made for Dombey and Son to trade in, and the sun and moon were made to give them light. Rivers and seas were formed to float their ships, rainbows gave them promise of fair weather, winds blew for or against their enterprises, stars and planets circled in their orbits, to preserve and violate a system of which they were the center. Common abbreviations took new meanings in his eyes, and had sole reference to them. A. D. had no concern with Anno Domini, but stood for Anno Dombey and Son. He had risen, as his father had before him, in the course of life and death, from Son to Dombey, and for nearly 20 years had been the sole representative of the firm. Of those years he had been married, 10 married, as some said, to a lady with no heart to give him, whose happiness was in the past, and who was content to bind her broken spirit to the dutiful and meek endurance of the present. Such idle talk was little likely to reach the ears of Mr. Dombey, whom it nearly concerned, and probably no one in the world would have received it with such utter incredulity as he, if it had reached him. Dombey and Son had often dealt in eyes, but never in hearts. They left that fancy where to boys and girls, and boarding schools and books. Mr. Dombey would have reasoned that a matrimonial alliance with himself must, in the nature of things, be gratifying and honorable to any woman of common sense, that the hope of giving birth to a new partner in such a house could not fail to awaken a glorious and stirring ambition in the breast of the least ambitious of her sex, that Mrs. Dombey had entered on that social contract of matrimony, almost necessarily part of a genteel and wealthy station, even without reference to the perpetuation of family firms, with her eyes fully open to these advantages, that Mrs. Dombey had had daily practical knowledge of his position in society, that Mrs. Dombey had always sat at the head of his table, and done the honors of his house in a remarkably ladylike and becoming manner, that Mrs. Dombey must have been happy, that she couldn't help it, or, at all events, with one drawback, yes, that he would have allowed, with only one, but that one certainly involving much, with the drawback of hope deferred, that hope deferred, which, as the scripture very correctly tells us, Mr. Dombey would have added in a patronizing way, for his highest distinct idea even of scripture, if examined, would have been found to be, that as forming part of a general whole, of which Dombey and Son formed another part, it was therefore to be commended, and upheld, maketh the heart sick. They had been married 10 years, and until this present day on which Mr. Dombey sat jingling, and jingling his heavy gold watch chain in the great armchair by the side of the bed, had had no issue to speak of, none worth mentioning. There had been a girl some 6 years before, and the child, who had stolen into the chamber unobserved, was now crouching timidly in a corner whence she could see her mother's face. But what was a girl to Dombey and Son? In the capital of the house's name and dignity, such a child was merely a piece of base coin that couldn't be invested a bad boy, nothing more. Mr. Dombey's cup of satisfaction was so full at this moment, however, that he felt he could afford a drop or two of its contents, even to sprinkle on the dust in the bypath of his little daughter. So he said, "Florence, you may go, and look at your pretty brother, if you like, I dare say. Don't touch him." Apostrophe, the child glanced keenly at the blue coat and stiff white cravat, which, with a pair of creaking boots, and a very loud ticking watch, embodied her idea of a father, but her eyes returned to her mother's face immediately, and she neither moved nor answered. Her insensibility is as proof against a brother, as against everything else, apostrophe said Mr. Dombey to himself. He seemed so confirmed in the previous opinion by the discovery, as to be quite glad of it. Next moment, the lady had opened her eyes, and seen the child, and the child had run towards her, and, standing on tiptoe, the better to hide her face in her embrace, had clung about her with a desperate affection very much at variance with her years. "Oh Lord bless me!" Apostrophe apostrophe said Mr. Dombey, rising testily. "A very ill-advised and feverish proceeding this, I am sure. Please to ring there for Miss Florence's nurse. Really the person should be more care apostrophe, wait. I had better ask Dr. Peps, if he'll have the goodness, to step upstairs again perhaps. I'll go down. I'll go down. I needn't beg you," apostrophe he added, pausing for a moment at the settee before the fire, "to take particular care of this young gentleman, Mrs. apostrophe, block it, sir." Apostrophe apostrophe suggested the nurse, a simpering piece of faded gentility, who did not presume to state her name as a fact, but merely offered it as a mild suggestion. "Of this young gentleman, Mrs. Blockett. Apostrophe, no, sir, indeed. I remember when Miss Florence was born apostrophe, apostrophe said Mr. Dombey, bending over the basket bedstead, and slightly bending his brows at the same time. Miss Florence was all very well, but this is another matter. This young gentleman has to accomplish a destiny. A destiny, little fellow." Apostrophe as he thus apostrophized the infant he raised one of his hands to his lips, and kissed it, Then, seeming to fear that the action involved some compromise of his dignity, went, awkwardly enough, away. Dr. Parker Peps, one of the court physicians, and a man of immense reputation for assisting at the inquests of great families, was walking up and down the drawing room with his hands behind him, to the unspeakable admiration of the family surgeon, who had regularly puffed the case for the last 6 weeks, among all his patients, friends, and acquaintances, as one to which he was in hourly expectation day and night of being summoned, in conjunction with Dr. Parker Pep. "Well, sir," apostrophe said Dr. Parker Peps in a round, deep, sonorous voice, muffled for the occasion, like the knocker, "do you find that your dear lady is at all roused by your visit?" Apostrophe apostrophe, stimulated as it were? Apostrophe apostrophe, said the family practitioner faintly, bowing at the same time to the doctor, as much as to say, "excuse my putting in a word, but this is a valuable connection." Apostrophe, Mr. Dombey was quite discomfited by the question. He had thought so little of the patient that he was not in a condition to answer it. He said that it would be a satisfaction to him if Dr. Parker Peps would walk upstairs again. "Good. We must not disguise from you, sir," apostrophe said Dr. Parker Peps, "that there is a want of power in Her Grace the Duchess. I beg your pardon, I confound names, I should say, in your amiable lady, that there is a certain degree of languor, and a general absence of elasticity, which we would rather not see," apostrophe interposed the family practitioner with another inclination of the head. "Quite so," apostrophe said Dr. Parker Peps, "which we would rather not see. It would appear that the system of Lady Cankaby, excuse me, I should say of Mrs. Dombey, I confuse the names of cases, apostrophe, so very numerous," apostrophe murmured the family practitioner, "can't be expected, I'm sure, quite wonderful, if otherwise Dr. Parker Peps' West End practice, apostrophe, thank you," apostrophe said the doctor. "Quite so. It would appear, I was observing, that the system of our patient has sustained a shock, from which it can only hope to rally by a great and strong," apostrophe, "and vigorous," apostrophe murmured the family practitioner. "Quite so," apostrophe assented the doctor, "and vigorous effort. Mr. Pilkins here, who from his position of medical advisor in this family no one better qualified to fill that position, I am sure. Apostrophe, oh. Apostrophe, apostrophe," murmured the family practitioner. "Praise from Sir Hubert Stanley. Apostrophe, you are good enough," apostrophe returned Dr. Parker Peps, "to say so. Mr. Pilkins, who, from his position, is best acquainted with the patient's constitution in its normal state, an acquaintance very valuable to us, informing our opinions in these occasions, is of opinion, with me, that nature must be called upon to make a vigorous effort in this instance, and that if our interesting friend the Countess of Dombey, I beg your pardon, Mrs. Dombey, should not be apostrophe able," apostrophe said the family practitioner, "to make," apostrophe said Dr. Parker Peps, "that effort," apostrophe said the family practitioner, "successfully," apostrophe said they both together. Then, apostrophe added Dr. Parker Peps, "alone and very gravely, a crisis might arise, which we should both sincerely deplore." Apostrophe, with that, they stood for a few seconds looking at the ground. Then, on the motion made in dumb show of Dr. Parker Peps, they went upstairs, the family practitioner opening the room door for that distinguished professional, and following him out, with most obsequious politeness. To record of Mr. Dombey that he was not in his way affected by this intelligence, would be to do him an injustice. He was not a man of whom it could properly be said that he was ever startled, or shocked, But he certainly had a sense within him that if his wife should sicken and decay, he would be very sorry, and that he would find something gone from among his plate and furniture, and other household possessions, which was well worth the having, and could not be lost without sincere regret. Though it would be a cool, businesslike, gentlemanly, self-possessed regret, no doubt. His meditations on the subject were soon interrupted, first by the rustling of garments on the staircase, and then by the sudden whisking into the room of a lady rather past the middle age than otherwise, but dressed in a very juvenile manner, particularly as to the tightness of her bodice, who, running up to him with a kind of screw in her face and carriage, expressive of suppressed emotion, flung her arms around his neck, and said, in a choking voice, "My dear Paul, he's quite a dummy." Apostrophe, well. ... returned her brother, for Mr. Dombey was her brother. "I think he is like the family. Don't agitate yourself, Louia." ... "It's very foolish of me, ... said Louia, sitting down, and taking out her pocket handkerchief, "but he's such a perfect Dombey." ... Mr. Dombey coughed. "It's so extraordinary, ... said Louia, smiling through her tears, which indeed were not overpowering, as to be perfectly ridiculous. "So completely our family. I never saw anything like it in my life. ... But what is this about Fanny, herself? ... said Mr. Dombey. "How is Fanny?" ... "My dear Paul, returned Louia, "it's nothing whatever. Take my word, it's nothing whatever. There is exhaustion, certainly, but nothing like what I underwent myself, either with George or Frederick. An effort is necessary. That's all. If dear Fanny were a dummy. But I dare say she'll make it. I have no doubt she'll make it. Knowing it to be required of her, as a duty, of course she'll make it. My dear Paul, it's very weak and silly of me, I know, to be so trembly and shaky from head to foot. But I am so very queer, that I must ask you for a glass of wine, and a morsel of that cake." ... Mr. Dombey promptly supplied her with these refreshments from a tray on the table. "I shall not drink my love to you, Paul," ... said Louia. "I shall drink to the little Dombey. Good gracious me. It's the most astonishing thing I ever knew in all my days. He's such a perfect Dombey." ... Quenching this expression of opinion in a short hysterical laugh which terminated in tears, Louia cast up her eyes and emptied her glass. "I know it's very weak and silly of me, ... she repeated, "to be so trembly and shaky from head to foot, and to allow my feelings so completely to get the better of me, but I cannot help it. I thought I should have fallen out of the staircase window as I came down from seeing dear Fanny, and that idiotical thing." ... These last words. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.